Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I am Markus Hippi. On this special festive literary edition of the show, we are heading out of the office and handing things over to Brett Wollstonecroft, manager of one of our favorite bookshops that just happens to be around the corner from the office, Dawn's Books. Brett has some recommendations for last-minute fiction and non-fiction that might tickle the fancy of your loved ones or that you might want someone else to get for you. Here is Brett Wollstonecroft.
I'm Brett Wollstonecroft. I'm the manager of Dawn's Books here in Marylebone High Street. And these are my top picks, my top reads for 2016. Here we are today with what I think are my choice of the non-fiction books of the year, really, for 2016. And start with, I think, probably the book of the year, possibly even non-fiction and fiction, would be Christopher de Hamel's Meetings with Remarkable Manuscripts. Certainly probably the most beautiful book of the year, and I think just fascinating. He is a dealer in medieval manuscripts, and it is his knowledge really which makes this book so wonderful, in that he talks about the history, the context, the background, characters that turn up from history in it, and the backstory to those. It's one of those books where it's an expert who knows how to get his subject across to you and make it sound utterly fantastic. It is a book you can dip in and out of. Beautiful book. Is it a coffee table book? Is it a history? It's everything, really. It's got this beautiful illustrated manuscript. It's the Tree of Life, I guess, on the front. It's this beautiful sort of Parliament of Fowls type sort of drawing on the front with an illuminated version of his name on it. So it beautifully evokes those kind of superb medieval manuscripts just in the cover. It's a stunning, stunning book. So certainly in terms of sales and most talked about book of the year, I would probably say Tim Marshall's Prisoners of Geography, which came into paperback this year. 10 maps that tell you everything you need to know about global politics. I think it's a book of a moment. Now, probably more than ever, people want a clearer, easier understanding, better understanding of the world around them and the issues that are driving, let's say, Russia and Ukraine or Chinese expansionism, the Middle East and the problems there. So it's a book that I think answers a lot of anxieties we've got, but it's a fascinating read. And again, somebody in Tim Marshall, who's from a journalistic background, knows how to explain. And that's what makes this book such a pleasure and such a starting point for so many of those conversations people have had throughout the year. So I've picked Inside Vogue, A Diary of My 100th Year. Many people have seen Alexandra Shulman, the editor-in-chief of Vogue, the documentary, I think BBC documentary about her. I just think it's a fascinating book in that it's a great attempt to show just the variety of pressures on someone at the top of the fashion industry. Not only is she dealing with the centenary edition of Vogue, she's got the documentary team around her, she's got endless meetings, she's got a gala dinner to arrange. And at the same time, she's you know, back at home dealing with all those things we have to deal with, like sort of broken boilers and so on. So I think it's a really honest diary, and she could have written something so much more sort of PR-friendly in a way. And I really enjoyed it in that it's a proper insight into an extraordinary industry, I think an extraordinary woman, an extraordinary year. She's always been exceptionally honest and very honest in this book about, you know, how she came to understand the fashion industry. And I think that kind of willingness to learn and that honesty shines through, and that, I mean, she's one of those people who you just want to hear more from, because she doesn't assume that you're ignorant if you don't know your way around the fashion industry. She doesn't assume everybody knows everything about fashion, and she's happy to admit, if you hear her talk as we had here a few days ago, that, you know, she didn't understand everything about the fashion industry and the different sort of aspects of it when she came into it as a journalist. So I think, you know, she is one of those people who just show you how much you can learn and how much an outsider in a way can bring to an industry as well. Tim Moore's Cyclist Who Went Out in the Cold, Adventures Along the Iron Curtain Trail. Tim Moore is one of the funnier travel writers, I think. I think forget the idea that he's some sort of cycling writer. His past two or three books have recreated a trip around the Tour de France, a trip around an extraordinary Giro d'Italia, the Italian cycling tour. But more than anything else, he's a very funny, very observant travel writer. He's just probably as fine a travel writer as many people like Bryson and so on. And this book's a great book. He cycled an extraordinary length, really, of the Ardennes Curtain from Finland in winter, minus 20 and all the rest of it, down through to Turkey in the Black Sea. Did it on an East German shopping bike because he believes in authenticity. It's not really a gimmick. I think in his case, he wants to do something that relates to where he is. But you're getting the history of the Cold War, which perhaps, who knows, we're going back into as you go, and a lot more history with it, and a lot of fun, a lot of humour, and an extraordinary 10,000-mile cycle trip, which I think few of us would want to attempt. But certainly one of the travel books of the year, I think. So The Trial of Lady Chatterley's Lover, Sybil Bedford. This is actually published by us, Daunt Books. But Sybil Bedford, I think many people will know as a wonderful novelist and travel writer. But in her early days, she was a court reporter, and she got the job of reporting the Lady Chatterley trial. And it is Sybil Bedford's reporting which so many people have borrowed over the years, including these extraordinary passages where the judge is in horror trying to get the good and the great and the bishops to condemn what he clearly regards as unbelievably filthy language. And they all rather sweetly say, no, no, this is all about love and it's very tender and gentle. And over again, he keeps reprinting, surely you can't mean this, these words. And he lists them quite often, the endless repeated sort of expletives all sort of dotted out. It's a very, very funny read, and it's a portrait of an age. It takes you back to an age where it was possible to obviously have an obscenity trial for a book in like Lawrence's Lady Chatterley's Lover, but it's a great bit of court reporting and we enjoyed publishing it, and it's a very nice little stocking filler. So portrait of an age, some great cameos and some fabulous kind of one-liners in there which I won't spoil. A History of the World in 500 Walks by Sarah Baxter, I think for us is essentially our origins in travel book. As a travel bookshop, this is, I think, one of the most interesting collections of walks you could put together. Each walk has a real sort of historical relevance. So you'll have Hadrian's Wall Path, for instance, Walk on Easter Island. So they are physical walks you can do all over the world, but it's an illustration of how you can walk through fascinating, extraordinary history and how much trails and paths are part of the sort of human experience. So say John Muir's trail in California, the Haute Route in Switzerland. I mean, each page really is a really important, you know, journey on foot, if you like, retold through this book. Beautifully illustrated, lovely photographs. You'll learn as much as you will make yourself fit. The Great Wall Walk, China in there, I think, you know, if one was going to sort of pick an extraordinary walk across an extraordinary country, you might pick that one. But really there are just endless ones here, and a lot that I think we don't really know particularly well. The Sultan's Trail, Austria to Turkey, there are some great walks in Turkey, but that really cuts right the way across Ottoman history, Habsburg history. Goodness me, what a fantastic, fantastic walk, the great architecture. So I think one of the real fun non-fiction books that's come out just before Christmas is Courtney Watson McCarthy's Hokusai Pop-Ups. It's published by Thames & Hudson. It's Hokusai's perennially popular The Great Wave picture. Every year I think people will come in here hunting their Hokusai calendar. But I think this is something special in that it's a pop-up book really for adults. But Hokusai's pictures genuinely lend themselves to pop-up technology. They really do work superbly well, and I think each one you could stick on your sideboard or your coffee table and have a bit of fun with throughout the Christmas period and beyond. They are, you know, beautifully done. I think there are about sort of 10, 12 pop-ups in it. It is a reminder that things that which you perhaps generally associate with children's books, pop-up technology can be absolutely fabulous for taking ourselves away from ourselves as adults. So heartily recommend Hokusai Pop-Ups. These are my selection, really, of suggestions of fiction presents for the year, a mixture here of paperbacks and hardbacks. Starting with Robert Harris's Conclave. Robert Harris knows how to do political thrillers. I think someone suggested it may be because he knows so many people from powerful, rich worlds, and he's written great modern political thrillers, he's written great Roman political thrillers. This is a thriller set amongst a conclave where the Pope has died, the cardinals gather, and out of that sort of 72-hour period of choosing a new Pope, he carves just an extraordinary page-turner, a really unputdownable thriller, an intelligent thriller where you're learning again, I think, you know, one will find more here about the Catholic Church and its power struggles than you would in many, many a serious history. It's just great fun. So I've chosen Eilert Gunnar Gosson's Waking Lions. The strap line is, how do you know what you're capable of? I really love this as a thriller during the year in that it's a thriller that takes a central character who is perfectly ordinary, doctor, loves his wife, puts him in the middle of a dilemma, which I won't be spoiling it to tell you that he has an accident in which he kills someone who is an illegal immigrant into Israel. The dilemma then of what he does and how he deals with it, you know, is never shied away from all the way through the book, and it drives a thriller-like plot all the way through. But it's a book where you could so easily turn away and make a kind of easy ending, or make him flawed in some way, or make there a reason for why what he's doing. But he's a very ordinary man. It's a very ordinary and therefore terrifying dilemma. Just a fantastic read. I think very much because it's a book of the moment, and Robert C. Thaler's Tobacconist. I say book of the moment, it's set in the late 1930s and early 1940s in Vienna. C. Thaler had a fantastic hit with a book called A Whole Life, which was about one man, just a life that endured in the Austrian Alps through the 20th century. This is the follow-up. And the reason it's interesting, he is a simple kid from the country who comes to Vienna, gets a job in a tobacconist, and meets Sigmund Freud. And out of those conversations flows this beautiful book in which we find a simple, ordinary man who doesn't quite understand what's going on in what becomes Nazi Austria and the Third Reich, but knows how to react when those closest to him are affected by it. And it cuts through a lot of the dilemmas we feel perhaps now about what you do when you see things around you that you know are wrong or intolerance. And it will make a lot of those apparent dilemmas seem much more clear. It's just a very simple, enjoyable book, and I really love that. So I think possibly book of the year would be The Essex Serpent by Sarah Perry. It's her second book. Sarah Perry is a wonderful, wonderful new novelist. She comes from a background a little similar to Jeanette Winterson's in that she grew up with a very religious upbringing. And from that, I think, has grown a particularly interesting perspective on the world. This is really a gothic novel, and this is why I think it works so well. It's about a central character called Cora Seaborn, whose husband dies. She moves out of London out to the Blackwater estuary in Essex, and there she begins a series of friendships in a small sort of village, and a series of events happen that unwind in this fantastically sort of dense sort of gothic way. The Essex Serpent, we're not really sure what the Essex Serpent is. It is a return of a creature that has plagued the area in the 17th century. But it stands in this book for all sorts of things. There are unspoken lusts going on. There are unspoken aspects of sort of Victorian society that are coming out through here, and challenges, and particularly in women's lives, coming out through it. She's got an awful lot weaving through it and a mystery at the heart of it. And I absolutely loved it. You're completely carted away from where you are with this book. She's a clever, clever writer. So I picked The Reader on the 627, which came into a paperback this year. It's by Jean-Paul Didier-Laurent. It's a book very close to my heart about a young man who works in a factory where they pulp books, and he can't bear it, as perhaps many of us book lovers couldn't bear it, and he saves pages from the pulping machine and likes to read them on the train, gathers a following on the train. And from that, there is all sorts of fun happens when he occasionally comes across a few sort of pages from erotic novels, which he reads to the new following he gets, particularly in the local sort of old ladies' home. It's a book with a great charm. It's very French, with a sort of serious purpose. And part of it is, in the end, where and how he finds love. And I suppose the message is partly love may turn out to be much closer than you think and in places you don't expect. It's just a lovely little book, very, very French. You could see this book being done as a sort of a French sort of cartoon. Charming, very funny, and very uplifting. And I think certainly in any sort of dark moment, this is the kind of book to really lift you up and make you chuckle. A very, very warm and happy Christmas from everybody here at Dawn Books.
And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to our guest reviewer this week, Brett Wollstonecroft from Daunt Books in Marylebone. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Markus Hippi. This show was produced by Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when Tim Roby will be in the studio to talk film. But for now, goodbye from me and thanks for listening.